Perry, are you there?
I am here.
Great. Well, this is Jonathan Mizell, and I'm on with Perry Marshall, and this is the Google AdWords Teleclinic. And today we are in session two, and what we're going to do is review some of the techniques that we didn't get to in the past call, and we're also going to answer the questions that people asked us after we made that first presentation. We got some phenomenal questions. Perry mentioned earlier we got about 20 pages of them. There were some duplications and some overlaps, and also some of the stuff that people asked we're going to be covering in the first little section of the presentation. But I think we're going to get to just about everybody's question, and if we didn't, you know, let us know. I'm sure if you have a quickie, you can go ahead and just drop us an email. Perry, I'm ready to go ahead and get started. How about you?
I'm raring to go.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and just complete the techniques that you had laid out in your 12-point plan. I'm going to ask everybody on the phone to go over to perrymarshall.com/923, and on that page, you will be able to download and view the notes and the presentation part two, which has got Perry's plan. We're going to go over some of the stuff from that PDF document, and Perry, go ahead, and I'm ready to take my notes. give us some more techniques.
Go to perrymarshall.com/923. It's the same page we went to in our earlier session, and there is a link that says handout for session two, and you can just click on it. And what I did was I outlined the steps that I went through on this piece of paper, and I got basically through 1 to 9, and I want to focus on part of 10 because this is a really interesting opportunity. What we were talking about was ways of selecting keywords and bidding on keywords very specifically to minimize your bid prices, and then a whole bunch of response modifiers, little tweaks that would increase your click-through rate. And there's a whole bunch of them here, and I'm not going to repeat them, but all of these things can adjust your click-through rate by 1 or 2 tenths of a point, sometimes more. And so when you add them all up, from where you start to where you end up after you rotate ads and test, you can very often be 2 or 3 times improvement on what you started with. I want to talk about kind of an esoteric little trick that I have found to be pretty effective. If you go to number 10,
And this is number 10 on the PDF document.
Yeah, on the PDF document handout for session 2.
Right, which you can get at perrymarshall.com/923.
Exactly. Okay. So if you go to 10, I already talked about there's two URLs. There's the URL that you send people to, and there's the URL that you display in the AdWords ad, which often is slightly different. And the first thing I talked about with respect to that on Tuesday was instead of mycooltoys.com, all lowercase, my, capital M, cool, capital C, toys, capital T, sometimes just making that change will bump up your response a tenth or 0.2%, which that could amount to a 5 or 10 or 20% improvement in the traffic you get for the same amount of money. Now here's another one that can add another dimension of improvement, which is a subdomain or a directory. If you are selling wagons and people are searching on wagons and your ad is about wagons, if your URL says www.mycooltoys.com/wagons, just the fact that they see that word wagons there will bump up your response usually. Mm. And now the only caveat to that is that if the directory mycooltoys.com/wagons, if they type that into a browser and it doesn't take them anywhere, or they get an error page or something like that, within a week or so, Google will catch up to you and you'll get whacked and they'll disable your ad because it doesn't meet their requirements. And the same situation exists if you do a subdomain. If you say wagons.mycooltoys.com, that's called a subdomain. It's something that can be set up with your ISP. And again, you usually have a few days or maybe a week to test that premise before you have to commit to it or get in some kind of a trouble. And I'm not trying to encourage you to go outside of Google's rules, but I'm just telling you that you might find that, you know, an ad that gets a 2% click-through rate under mycooltoys.com gets a 2.5% click-through rate if the URL is wagons.mycooltoys.com. And if you discover that, then you should get to work and set up a subdomain on your website so that it actually works like it's supposed to. And that can help quite a bit. Another thing that you can do, especially if you're in the market research mode and you're getting started and you don't have anything that you're tied to, is you can set up a website. Let's say that you're just doing some market research or you're trying to get some opt-ins before you commit to a complete product strategy. Maybe there's seven different URLs, seven different domain names that you're considering for your website, and you're not really sure which one would be the most appealing to people. You could register all seven of those domain names, and you could rotate ads with different domain names and have the world vote on them and have people pick a winner.
So let me just back up. I want to make sure I got that right. Let's say you were looking for a domain name, or you were just wondering if a domain could actually affect the response.
Which it will.
Which it will, and which we know, especially in search engine traffic, it can have an effect on. And we're not talking about search engine optimization and, you know, dashes and what Google likes as a search engine. We're talking about what they like as an advertising partner. And in this case, you could take 5 or 10 domain names. You would want to take the exact same ad, right?
Yep.
Then the only thing you change to that would be the domain name that it looks like you're driving the traffic to.
Right.
And you could run that for a while. And technically, Google does want you to have those domain names. Google does want those pages to be active.
Yeah.
However,
in a perfect world, you'd set them all up working.
Set them all up. But if you just did it, and then for a couple of days, maybe they disable them, and they come back, and they say, hey, you really do need to set up these domains. In the meantime, you've gotten clicks, and you can actually let people vote by virtue of clicks on which domain looks best to them.
Yep.
Wow.
That's right. So there's three little tricks to, you know, even pick a domain name that people would find more appealing than some other one.
Also, it just struck me that if you do have, let's say, mycooltoys.com/wagons, and you don't have something there, just put something there.
Right.
If that's your domain, just put something there. Even if all you're doing is framing the main page or the same page that you'd be doing, I think Google only requires that there be a page there, that it doesn't resolve to a dead domain or something.
Or
like
an
that.
Error, right.
Right, okay. Oh, very interesting.
Right.
What have you seen in terms of which of these is the most effective? Domain with subdirectory, or domain with subdomain?
Well, as far as domain itself, I'm just suggesting that use it to pick a better domain name. But once you have that domain name, if you can use a keyword, it appears to me that a subdomain is the most powerful tool, because it's the first thing they see as they read from left to right.
Got it. Okay.
They see a URL that says wagons.mycooltoys.com. I don't think the average web surfer knows the difference between the first part and the last part.
It's actually in the domain name, it's their keyword that they just typed in.
Exactly.
Okay. Boy,
exactly.
Huge difference.
So,
very
yeah, I mean, it could bump you up 10 or 20% from what you were before.
We use, we have three different hosts at CyberWave. I mean, we have many different domains, and every one of them allows us to set up subdomains, and there's no cost. at all in any case that I've seen to set those up. Maybe adding a new domain, but a subdomain is very easy to add, and that's just the word, the subdomain, and then dot, the main domain, dot com.
Yep.
Okay.
So I just discovered that about a week ago. I was kind of pleased with myself. So now the cat's out of the bag. Now other people are going to do it too. Okay. I'm ready for questions. Are you ready for questions?
I am. Now, was that everything? Those were the three things that we wanted to cover.
I want to jump for just a minute to this handout page. I want to go to number 3. This might not have been totally clear to everybody. Somebody sent me an email asking the difference between campaigns and groups. And actually, I use the word campaign pretty loosely because I say ad campaign. It could be Newsweek magazine. But in the context of Google AdWords, Google has a general category of a campaign and a subcategory of a group. And so if mycooltoys.com, if you sold bikes and you sold wagons, then the way you would want to set that up, and this is pretty important, you want to kind of think it through a little bit before you just go do it. You say campaign one is all about bicycles, and I only sell bicycles in campaign number one. And in the first group, I sell 10 speeds. In the second group, I sell dirt bikes. And maybe the third group, I sell 12 speeds. In the fourth group, I sell kids' bikes, or, you know, very narrow focuses, okay, in your keywords in each group. Sometimes you might have 10 groups that are all about dirt bikes, but they're about different kinds of keywords relating to dirt bikes. Like, you might have an entire group just BMX. You might have another group that's aluminum frames or something like that, but the keywords would be in very tight clusters. They wouldn't be scattered all over the place. You never want to have, anytime you have a group and it's got keywords that are all synonyms of each other, and it's got BMX, and it's got dirt bike, and it's got motocross, and it's got this, and it's got that. Anytime you got that much display of different keywords in a campaign, it's wrong. You always want very tightly related keywords all clustered together, connected to a very tightly related ad, and anytime you get outside of that, you just start a new group. But if it's about bicycles, and you put it under the bicycles. If you got wagons, maybe you got radio flyer keywords in group one, maybe you got red wagon keywords in group two. That's how you want to organize your campaign.
Well, and let me ask a question about that, actually, because I'm looking at our, here I am making changes to our Google campaigns as I'm listening to the teleclinic.
One of the people sent me an email. They said, Jonathan sounds like a kid in a candy store playing
with loving this stuff. Okay, so I just want to make sure I got it, because I'm looking at one of our campaigns. If we're selling a campaign, would be the main campaign. So, like, let's say we have a book on gardening, right?
Yep.
Let's say we have a line of products on gardening. We would have gardening would be the campaign, and then the groups would be, like, maybe our gardening tools, and another one would be gardening books.
Yeah, you might have shovels in one.
So we'd actually bring it down to, like, shovels. And then, let me ask this question. What if we started out with gardening tools, and then we were driving traffic in within a group, and we started to notice that certain groups were performing better than others? Then we'd use the trick that you told us about setting up a different group and using different ad trackers for those keywords.
Right.
So we start broad, and then we just keep narrowing it down based on where we see the actions and the clicks coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you can definitely do that, and you can see, you know, what people are clicking on and what isn't. The only problem is if you have gardening tools and you have an ad that says gardening tools, you know, buy them at a discount here or whatever, that's fairly general traffic as opposed to, you know, 6-inch spade or something really, really specific that people are looking for. Those really specific ones tend to convert to sales the best.
If I have, let's say, 50 different things in my gardening catalog, and I've got, say, equal number, say 60, 20 tools, 20 supplies and $20.
Okay.
Would you recommend starting with three groups, or would I be best to take all my shovels and put them into one group?
I'd do three campaigns, and I'd do...
Oh, got it.
So I do 20 groups.
I got
it. If I heard you right.
Yeah.
20,
yes.
20, 20. I do 20 groups in each campaign. I might even have 40 groups in each campaign, because one might be shovels and one might be spades, and even though they're the same thing, it's a different ad, it's a different keyword.
One will convert better.
One will. You might find that people that type in spades buy and people that type in shovels don't. Who knows? But you can find out, and you can find out reasonably fast.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have some examples of that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's great in terms of organization, because now you've helped every one of us figure that out. So we always start broad, and then we move down, and then with each in one of those groups, we might have however many keywords we have, 10, 20, 50.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, let's go ahead and get started on the questions. Let me pull these up. What was the first question that we had, Terry?
Okay, the first question was, does it make any difference if I bid on Speak Portuguese or Portuguese Speak? And the answer is, if you don't have any quotes or brackets around it, it doesn't make any difference. Okay? And that's one of the things you discover, is if you bid on Speak Portuguese, or Portuguese, it doesn't matter what order you type those words in when you bid on, with no punctuation, Portuguese Speak, and then you have Speak Portuguese in quotes, then you have Speak Portuguese in brackets. Well, if you're bidding on Speak Portuguese in quotes, then the Speak Portuguese without quotes is only going to get, it's only going to get impressions on appearances where there's a word in between them, or if they're not in that order.
Okay.
And so what will happen is, if you take Speak Portuguese and you bid on it the three different ways, you'll usually get the highest click-through rate on the brackets and the second highest click-through rate on the quotes, and often you'll get a very low click-through rate on the unspecified, because they're typing it a different way than you're even thinking.
Okay. And actually, that might even get disabled, huh?
It might get disabled. And the better you are at anticipating all the other things that they type in specifically, the harder it will be for it to not get disabled. But that's probably okay, because they sound like we're looking for something else anyway.
Right. I mean, when Google disables your word, provided it's not for content, you know, because that happens occasionally.
Right.
It's generally for everyone's good.
Yeah, it means you're not
hitting the mark with your ad.
Right, and you shouldn't take it all personal. You know, like, oh, the world hates me. I mean, it's kind of funny. You tend to feel that way. You go, oh man, I wrote this ad and I got 1,014 impressions and 2 clicks, and I got disabled. Ooh, you know, have a keyword funeral. No, it's no big deal, okay?
It's, you know, good, actually, because it's Google protecting you from irrelevant searchers who weren't going to buy, generally, anyway.
Generally, yeah. Yeah, and so if, and you can reactivate keywords just by changing your ads, and then they'll activate again.
And then they'll go back and it all starts over from scratch. And
yeah, you used to have to delete the keyword, start a new campaign. They used to make it really difficult, but they figured out that they were losing a lot of money that way.
Okay.
So they made it's easier. You just change the ad, and the keyword will usually come back.
Now, what about two other parts to that question? One relating to capitalization.
Oh, yes.
The other one versus singular versus plural.
Yeah, does it matter? Does it matter if I capitalized the P on Portuguese when I bid? No.
It does. In normal, I think people ask that question because I believe Google, in their normal search engine, does differentiate capitals.
Right.
But I don't think they don't at all in the AdWords. Is that right?
Right. Right. And so you don't have to worry about that. But singular, plural, here's the thing. Overture does not distinguish between singular and plural, and motorcycle and motorcycles is the same thing to Overture. And if you do a search on Overture, you're doing keyword research, you type in motorcycles, it'll give you a gazillion variations on motorcycle, and it won't give you any plurals at all, and they don't care, they don't notice the difference. Google, they do. It does make a difference. And if you get your keywords from Overture, you better make a double set of them and add plurals. And a lot of times, sometimes you even want to take the singulars and the plural, put them in different groups, write one add the singular, one add this plural. I mean, sometimes you want to do that. It depends on the word and whatever, but that can make a difference. And so Google does not approximate anything for you in that regard. And that's good if you really want to have control.
Yeah, it's the back to the old, do I just want to trust like the Overture, just go in and do the thing and maybe I make money and maybe I don't? Or do I want to have control over every aspect of the campaign? This is just one more way to control it. Take a few extra minutes to set it up. Guys, everyone listening to this knows, a couple extra minutes is nothing compared to the return on investment you're going to get from the time, from the time you invest to do it correctly the first time. It'll just, if it pays off today, it'll just keep paying off every single day.
Yep. And once these things are going, they don't usually require a lot of maintenance.
Right.
Sometimes things will change, but for the most part, they tend to be pretty steady. And what happens is, you're always split testing ads, and so, you got two ads running and they're pretty good, and maybe you go back a month later and you go, you know what, this one really hasn't been doing as well, so I'm going to replace it with another one. But yeah, definitely.
Well, let's look at keyword permutations as well, because I know there were some questions about how do we get 200 keywords.
Oh, yeah.
We only have 20, and I let me make a comment here. Keywords are just different keywords that you're bidding on. Even if it has brackets around it, that's a different keyword because it comes up on a different search. If you have 20 keywords and then you add your plurals and you might end up with, say, 30, right, or 35,
yep.
Then you add your brackets and quotes, you've now got 115, is that right? No, 105 keywords. So
yep.
In some cases, going from 20 keywords to 200 keywords, you can get halfway there simply by adding the plurals and then adding the brackets and the quotes.
Yeah.
And that takes you, so much further, and that's without even doing any keyword research, which we'll get into in a minute.
Right. Exactly. Maybe it's email and e-mail and e-mail.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's all these different ways that people type in things, and you just have to think about it a little bit and maybe use some sites that I like to use for research that we'll talk about pretty quickly here.
Okay, so. Good. So on the keyword permutations, do they compete with one another? That was a question.
Yeah, well, they do. Again, like the speak Portuguese without any punctuation and then adding the quotes, they definitely compete with each other. And sometimes you'll end up, like the one with no punctuation, it gets disabled because you can't get
the fewest clicks.
Right, right.
That's right.
Now, you could decide that, well, I don't like that, so you just go back to the way you were doing it, but you have to make that decision, and you might want to make that decision after you've actually used tracking to see if it converts to opt-ins or converts to sales.
Okay, good, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes as well.
Yep.
That's a great, great conversation. What's the next question?
The next question was, they used the example from before, arthritis versus arthritis pain relief,
mm-hmm.
and should I go for high volume, low quality traffic, or low volume, high quality traffic? Mm-hmm. And this is a really good question, and you can only truly answer by tracking, but let me give you a slightly different example, because I think it would be really helpful. it goes from the general to the specific. Let's talk about headaches. The word headache is a very general thing. It's something a person's probably looking for a solution for, though, right? A migraine is a much more specific thing. If you do a search on Google, you'll find there's two or three people bidding on headache. The reason there's not more is it's hard to write an ad that gets a high over the 0.5% with the word headache, because headache is so general. There are some terms like that where you really, really, really have to try a lot of things before you come up with an ad that'll get over a 0.5%.
Wow.
But
yeah,
you can get it for nickel. I guarantee you, you can get the word headache for nickel.
Well, let me ask you a question on negative qualifiers.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if no one asked that question, but a little background. On Overture, if you have a keyword that's general, because they don't have a minimum click-through, so you don't have this issue there, but if you have a keyword that's very general, like headache, you might get a lot of clicks, but of course it's hard to make money with those clicks.
Yep.
And so what we found you can do on Overture is you write a kind of a negative ad, and you
right.
add negative qualifiers, and so you'd say something like, cure your headache for $5 instantly.
Right.
Or the number one best-selling headache plan, you know, buy it here.
Right.
You'd make it very clear that this is not an informational site, but rather you're going to be asking them for money,
mm-hmm.
eventually.
And you disqualify them, you get less clicks and more
right.
quality
and,
clicks.
Right, and so you get a lower number of higher quality clicks,
mm-hmm.
because the people know going in that you're going to ask them for money. The easiest way to do it is to either put some sort of qualification in there, like, if, for example, credit card companies, you might say, the best credit card for people with great credit.
Yes.
Right, and if people don't have great credit, they're simply not going to click on it because they know what kind of credit they have.
That's
or
right.
the best credit card or solve your headache problems for $5. They know it's going to cost money going in. Have you used negative qualifiers in Google?
Yes. Well, okay, in the ads?
Yeah.
Yes. Sometimes you want to do that because if you're not really having a problem getting the 0.5% and it's, let's say there's a lot of free stuff and you don't want freebie cherry picker people,
right.
then you might say, you know, headache medicine $10 and you'll get less clicks. And as long but that would be on a more specific kind of term. That wouldn't work on something like headache, but it would work on something like migraine.
Mm.
I was going to talk about migraine because migraine, last I looked, there was about 8 bidders. Migraine is a much more specific term, and it's just a more focused thing. It's easier to get clicks on it. Now here's the interesting thing. There is a migraine prescription medicine called Imitrex. And Imitrex is like one of these wonder drugs. It costs about $15 a pill. And if you do a search on Imitrex, there are 60 companies bidding on Imitrex.
Wow.
Imitrex is a highly, highly specific solution to a headache problem. People know about it. People search for it. People comparison shop for it. And so think of the difference between headache, migraine, and Imitrex.
Oh, my God. You got 2 bidders, 6 or 8 bidders, and 60 bidders.
Right. Okay. Now, that tells you a lot about the market. It really does. Now, just as a general strategy, if I was trying to buy the nickel traffic with the word headache, I would not try to sell them Imitrex. What I would do is I would take them to a squeeze page, which is just an opt-in page. We will talk about that in a few minutes. I would take them to a squeeze page. I would tell them that we got a report or a 5-day course or a series of tutorials on solving headaches. I'd get an opt-in, and then I'd send them autoresponders for the next week, and I would try to convert them or educate them a little missionary work on the cheap to teach them about, I've got this really specific solution for headaches. Maybe it's a chiropractor, he's got acupuncture, or I don't know, whatever. You could do something with nickel traffic. I don't think you could sell them Imitrex, though. You know, at the other extreme, 60 companies bidding on Imitrex, that's not really a battle I'd care to fight. Migraine might be the right thing in the middle. And when I did my research on migraine, the sites that had the ads that had the most click-through rates and the fullest popularity bars were the ones that talked about information-oriented things rather than product-oriented things.
Okay. Interesting.
So, I got another question. Somebody said, are there any negative keywords that are universal? Where do you get them, and how do they impact your click-through rate? I don't know that there's any universal ones. I think free is a common one. But here's how you get them. If you use WordTracker, use Overture's inventory tool, you type in headache. Let's talk about something different. I liked that Hillary Clinton ad that How to Destroy a Village. I thought that was kind of funny. So I type in Hillary Clinton. I got a whole bunch of stuff. There's 21,000 searches a month. Then there's Hillary Rodham Clinton, Hillary Clinton picture, Hillary Clinton nude, Senator Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton photo. Well, if you are a Hillary Clinton, let's say you had a pro-Hillary Clinton site. Now, I don't know why you would have that, but let's say you did. You probably want to put the term negative nude in your keywords so that people looking for nude pictures of Hillary don't click on your ad.
Right.
They don't see your ad.
You wouldn't want anybody who says, I hate Hillary, to get to that page. You would only want to bid on the phrases that are likely to come up that would really match the audience that you're looking for. So you disqualify the words hate and dislike.
And anti. Right.
But just like what we did with pop-ups, and we came up with that funny example. When we advertise our pop-up course on Google, we have, you know, our negatives are killer, stopper, blocker, software, anti. And if the guy selling pop-up blockers is advertising on Google, then his negatives are going to be words like advertising, generator. He does not want to have his ad displayed for people who are trying to make a pop-up.
Right.
He wants his ad for people who want to stop a pop-up.
Right. The same problem exists in telemarketing. There's people looking for telemarketing companies, and there's people looking to stop telemarketers. Well, you don't want the other guys clicking on your ad. They'll just waste your money. And they'll find the opposite of what they wanted.
Well, and plus, when we added all those negatives to our pop-up thing, guess what happened to our click-through rate?
It went up.
Way up.
Because there's the same number of people looking for it, but now less people seeing it.
Yeah.
So that's a very good one.
Let's keep going.
Okay, keyword research tools. How do you get your 20 and turn it into 200? Well, I like inventory.overture.com as a starter. Again, it only gives you singulars. You're going to have to add the plurals. I'll just paste them into a Word document, do find and replace, and then I got a new list. There's a software that I have sold to some customers but have not officially released yet called Keyword Blizzard. And you'll eventually be hearing about that sooner as opposed to later. I've got a developer that's ironing out some bugs. WordTracker.com, you can type something in and they will give you an extensive list. I want to say something about WordTracker and Overture. Both of those tools tell you how many searches were done on each phrase that they produced for you. And they give you numbers. Now, Overture gives you Overture's numbers. WordTracker gives you numbers from a bunch of other search engines. I don't even know exactly where they get their data. I don't know if it's from Teoma or from, I don't even know where they get it. The numbers on WordTracker are only relative. They're not absolutely meaningful to you. It'll say something like, well, you know, this got 2,000 searches, but it doesn't equate to Google. All I can tell you about Google is Google will give you more in almost all cases. Or like Google versus Overture, technical audiences and academic stuff and university stuff and research stuff is like 10 times the traffic on Google compared to Overture.
And also, Terry, can't you check the Google AdWord inventory just by having it adding an ad and then adding some keywords and having it do keyword estimates?
Yes, and that's another good point, is Google does not give you a way to say how many people searched on Hillary Clinton. What they do is they have a keyword estimator. You set up your campaigns, and there's a thing that says estimate traffic, and you click on it, and based on your bid price, it will estimate how many clicks you're going to get, not how many searches there were. And one of the people at Google told me that the reason they do it that way, I'm sure they got some business reasons as well, but one of the benefits to you is that some keywords get higher click-through rates all the way across the board than others. And those estimates they give you are actually based on the click-through rates other advertisers are getting on the same keywords.
Okay, so even though it looks like it's not, you know, the same kind of intelligence and we need to know how many searches are done, it's far more relevant to us advertisers than what Overture delivers.
Right. The only disadvantage of it is Google doesn't give you as big of a list of keyword variations as Overture does, so that's why I like the Overture tool. But
there were a couple others that you'd mentioned. Was it the pay-per-click toolkit?
Yeah, there's one called ppctoolkit.com, which I have not used. It was recommended to me by somebody who's on the call. I think that was Romel. John Keel's got one called keywordbidoptimizer.com, which is for Overture and draws off of Overture's results.
And there's a brand new one that was just released, I think, last week for Google. Is that correct?
Yes.
Called AdWords Analyzer?
Yeah, AdWordsAnalyzer.com. Now, that's another one I have not used. They have an interesting thing where you type things in, and it goes, and it's called scraping. They scrape Google's pages with a software program. They count how many ads there are and how many bidders are on all these different keywords, and they report the results to you. It looks on the surface to be a very useful thing. The only fly in the ointment is scraping is against Google's terms of service. I don't think they're going to arrest you like Hillary Rosen and the RIAA MP3 lawyers might, but there are some potential issues. I really don't know how those guys are doing. I don't know if they could be getting served papers by Google for all I know. But
so it may or may not be a good tool. But probably the best thing to do is to wait until they and Google get together and figure out a way to do it without violating Google's terms of service.
Yeah. I think it's just the software you download. It doesn't run from their server. So jury's out. I can't speak with much expertise on that. But there are some issues.
Okay.
Let's just say that.
Now, there were some other tools that you came up with. They're not necessarily keyword makers or keyword-specific tools, but they're just online tools which people can do as from a research standpoint.
Yeah.
Expand the keywords even more. What are those tools?
Well, let me just preface by saying that every time I've done campaigns, there was always some keywords that I thought of 2 weeks later that should have been obvious, and I didn't think of them. Not along the lines of like synonyms, or you know, like a guy that sells golf clubs might potentially bid on Arnold Palmer, but he might not think of it for 3 months and go, geez, I could bid on the word Arnold Palmer and I get a bunch more clicks. So I'll tell you some tools that I've used. If you go to AltaVista.com, they have this link called Prisma where you can type in a word and it will give you a bunch of suggestions of things that are related to that word. And that can be pretty useful. Now there's another one that I really, it's a cool, fun little site. I found it totally by accident somehow one day. It's called lexfn.com, www.lexfn, Larry, Edward, Xylophone, Frank, Nancy.com. And it's got all these different things you can check, but if you just do the default thing, if you type in golf, it will give you a whole bunch of words related to golf, stuff in literature, stuff in the news, names of people, name brands. It'll typically give you anywhere from 10 to maybe 50 or 100 related words. And sometimes it's more useful than other times, but I usually found that it is helpful. Another thing is just a thesaurus. Another thing is to go to competitors' web pages and see what words you find on them.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, we used to do that where we just look at other people's meta tags. Of course, now meta tags don't mean much, but you enter in your keyword in Google,
yeah,
and in every search engine, that continues to be a real search engine, which would be Google, AltaVista, Teoma, and there's probably one or two more that are real search engines left, that actually spider pages.
Yep.
And you would enter in your keyword and you would look at the pages that are coming up, and then you would basically go to those pages and study and see whether or not you can find other keywords within those pages.
Yep.
But you know, I met that LexFN. I mean, I entered in the word toys. It gives you synonyms, triggers, generalizations, specializes. It gives you part of. It gives you the antonym. It gives you rhyming. It gives you sound like. It gives you occupation of. I mean, this is amazing.
And there's even a link for Shakespeare.
There's no
way. I mean, who could not like that? We're all sophisticated people, aren't we?
Oh, this is great.
Yeah, it's a really cool tool.
Okay.
Or thesaurus.
You could just go to dictionary.com, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could. Now, here's another thing that I did one time. This was a technical company, and they're offering white papers about different things. What we did, we made a buzzword a buzzword guide. It was like this three-page. Actually, I think this is very useful in just about any industry. We had this three-page thing. It had like 75 different words and phrases that are technical jargon, lingo things that people don't, acronyms and stuff, people don't always know what they mean. And we hired somebody to make this list, come up with a short one-sentence definition of every single thing. And we offered it as a buzzword guide. And then we took all those buzzwords and some more that we got out of a glossary of a book, and we bid on all those as keywords. Bid all these technical acronyms and everything, and we just wrote an ad that said buzzword guide. And we got a nice click-through rate on it, a lot of opt-ins. It was people that wanted to know more about that subject. And we figured if they want to know more about this, they're probably going to have to buy something. And it was a catalog company with a lot of products, and so it made sense. And that campaign's been running for 9 months now.
Well, Perry, I have a question for you, which kind of relates to this. When you got you did a campaign for us, and you went in and you optimized everything. You spent a majority of the time that you ended up spending devising the keywords. Is that correct? I guess what I'm trying to say is if there's one thing that people, the question is, how do we come up with more keywords? And the answer is, spend more time on it. I think if there's one thing that's going to pay off probably better than anything else, it's getting new, interesting, different, related, semi-interested, semi-related keywords and finding out which ones convert.
And that's absolutely right. And I have found just experimentally, if I use the tools that I've already talked about, just about any product or service or whatever it is, by the time you've done all your homework, you're going to be able to come up with at least 500 keywords.
Well, let's say someone's listening to this right now and they're thinking, gosh, I want to spend my time in the most effective possible way.
Yep.
And they've decided to put some time aside to do the keyword research. When you say 500 keywords, does that take an hour or 3 hours or 5 days, or is that a...
Well, here's a procedure that I use, and you could do it in a couple hours. Okay. Get a subscription to Word Tracker. That's probably just the best, the simplest thing to do.
Okay.
And let's say that I sell chainsaws, just to pick something out of the air. I go to Prisma, I'll go to LexFN, I'll type in chainsaw. Maybe I'll go look at some meta tags. I'll do chainsaw search on Google, and I'll look at 10 different web pages, and with a piece of paper, I'll make a list of all of the chainsaw-related topics. I don't know a thing about chainsaws, but I guarantee you there's probably about 10 different groups of words that have a lot to do with chainsaws, like cutting down trees. You know, some people would be selling chainsaw and it would never occur to them to bid on the word cutting trees, okay? And I'm going to come up with a list of like 10 or 15 or 20 different basic words that have to do with chainsaw. Then I go to Word Tracker, and I enter every one of those words, and it's going to give me 100 variations on the word chainsaw, 100 variations on the word cutting tree, 100 different variations on the word prevent forest fire, something.
You haven't even gotten into the brand names of chainsaws, which could be, you know, McCullough,
yes,
Toro. And then we had a client, and he bids on all the model numbers. All the popular model numbers. He goes to Toro and he finds out what the most popular model number is, and then he bids on those keywords.
That's right.
And he doesn't just bid on, he bids on Toro, and he bids on Toro 1520 chainsaw, and he bids on 1520 chainsaw, and he bids on 1520 or model 1520.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's a lot of products that have model 1520, there's probably not a lot of people who have bid on the term 15 model 1520.
Nickel clicks.
Right, these are nickel clicks, and if it says very clearly at the top chainsaw in your description, even if the person enters in something esoteric about 1520, if they're looking for the chainsaw, bang, that ad comes up. It costs a nickel to get them. You get them in the door and hopefully convert them.
Yep.